happening? Hour two, J Mart and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage Doors right here in Nashville. AllFourSeasonsGarages.com. The chat is as juvenile as it's ever been. We're back in sixth grade. We're putting boobies on a calculator right now.
Spelling.
What is it? 8008135.
I never knew the whole word on there.
Is hellhole on the calculator today, too?
Yes. Yes.
In the chat, it might be.
4377.
Or 1-1.
Hey now. We are childish.
You can do it however you want to do it. We'll have Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports next segment. He put a list together of potential upsets in college football this year. Yeah. Number two on that list is Georgia, Tennessee.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
It seems like a lot of the write up is basically about how these games are going to be closer than people think. Or could be. Mm-hmm. And catching Tennessee, or Tennessee's catching Georgia late this year, which is, I don't know if that's good or bad. You might want to see them earlier rather than later, but it's still going to be tough in terms of Tennessee's offense is going to score against everybody. One thinks. If they don't, then things have gone very, very poorly.
It's going to be very interesting to see how it shakes out, man. I've never seen people have this much confidence in this type of offense, though. Maybe it's because the coach and his system's been run for a while, but on the other side of it, Mississippi State's coach, Leach, he's been a guy that's had a type of offense, and it kind of fizzles out a little bit. It doesn't seem like that. Some are saying this is a fizzle out type of offense. It seemed like, it could be. Is it more proven, Jay? Is that what they're saying, or it's dangerous because of the way they kind of set you up? I was looking at, Jalin Hyatt yesterday and how they really get him in open space, how they move them. And again, it's shocking to me every single time because we mostly cover the NFL. The hashes in college, they are a problem, man, for defenses as far as like setting it up. Like you set the ball on this hash and you have all of that field on the other side. And I can see where that disadvantage is. Like you're literally on an island trying to defend somebody. And I guess that's where if you have the athletes, that's where it can get very sticky for you if you don't have a good defense. And if you talk to most people that have played it, watched it, and just studied the game of college football, they'll tell you defenses in college are bad. And I guess that's where you can expose a team or two with that type of offense. And that's kind of what everybody's kind of relying on or just kind of stating when it comes to it. It was a Greg McElroy. What is his name from Alabama? Was kind of saying the same thing. I'm like, I don't know if you guys are just, pulling our leg when it comes to the Vols in this offense and Coach Heupel, but a lot of people seem to think the same exact thought about, what Tennessee could do.
I would say sort of not in the same vein, but they're kind of being talked about offensively, sort of the way the Chargers are in the NFL, where they just seem to be this very hyped up team that as of yet is still waiting to really have a signature accomplishment.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, they're coming. They're going to be the team this year. And I'm skeptical on the Chargers, not because I don't think Herbert's as good as advertised, but I need to see that coach late in games get it right this year. And I need to see them uncharger themselves because the Chargers throughout the history of their franchise have found a way to steal defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, they got a lot going on. As last year was the NFC West. Yeah, last year was the NFC West. Now it's the AFC West this year. It's going to be very interesting. And the Titans have the AFC West this year too?
Yeah.
Whew.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think highly of the Raiders, though, dog.
See, that right now, I can't say that out loud on August 10th. I did it last year too early with the Titans, but if the Raiders are in the Super Bowl, don't be surprised.
Dang.
I really like the Raiders a lot this year. Like, if I had to pick the division today, I'd pick the Raiders. As hard as that is for a Denver Broncos fan to do.
Over KC.
Yes. The next factor to me is, has McDaniels learned what he's doing?
Yeah, has he learned?
I believe Carr can be, I know he's good. I think he can be great with those weapons.
If there was a year to do Hard Knocks, it should have been the Raiders, I think, this year. Devontae, Carr, McDaniels,
I guess
all the players.
Was made before a lot of those things even happened.
But this was the year, instead of the burnt feet AB, this would have been the year to actually do that one, man. But we get our answers, at least part of our answers, starting tomorrow night with the Titans versus the Ravens. The Ravens pretty much said they weren't going to start their players either. So we'll get a bunch of these young draft picks, man. And I'm hoping, and we'll see how this shakes out, too, between Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones. Who's getting what reps? And Dylan Raidens and also Nicholas Petit-Frere, NPF. Like, what are those reps going to look like as far as the offensive line goes? And is it going to be mostly Logan Woodside, or will Malik actually get some burn? This game tomorrow this might be the most important one of the year just because of the first shake for the young guys. But after this, for the most part, this is what my mindset is, I don't think we're going to see much out of anybody else because they have the two joint practices. If we're going to watch anything, it's probably going to be this week as far as Traylon, as far as, you know, Aaron Brewer, as far as those type of guys, because the rest of it, I feel like, is going to shake out. And the one-on-ones against Tampa, the one-on-ones against Arizona, and that type of stuff. That is a big test. That's a hell of a challenge, dude, to have those two teams coming to your city and you do joint practices with them, too. Defensively, you're going against the GOAT. Like, Tom's probably not going to play in the game, right? They might do a series.
Right.
But they're going to have some scenarios. Don't touch Tom. Everything else is live. Like, that is what it's going to end up being whenever Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks come into town. So, I wish they had these type of like practices at the stadium, honestly, just simply because this is must show. If the Titans wanted to capitalize on ticket sales, sell a practice with Tom Brady and your Tennessee Titans in the stadium. Like, you get some side cash for that one, Jay. That's the matchup I'm looking forward to in practice.
That's going to be more relevant, newsworthy, important than the game that gets played on Saturday the 20th.
100%.
Nobody cares about that.
Unless you're going to get a cheap ticket and want to go check them out. Like, that's what that game's going to be. And I'm not dismissing that either, because you get an opportunity to go see NFL talent, you go see that NFL talent, especially when it's affordable. But this Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones, I feel like it's Aaron's job right now. Even though I still see some people say he's small, he's going to get bodied. And I thought he was thicker than what his size said on his write-up. They also said he's not about 274. He's holding at 290. So 290 at 6'1 is a whole lot better than 274. He should hold his own. It's the duration of it and how teams try to single him out is going to be what really decides how he plays this year. I'm not denying him whatsoever. Is it a little bit of concern? Yeah, it is. But first-time starter, young and ambitious, has a whole lot of grit and fight about him. Aaron Brewer is out to prove a lot. And I just wanted to see if it's actually going to show on film. Is it actually going to be able to be delivered? Because I can want to run a 4.4.
Right.
Jay, look.
Far too slow.
There we go. I'm not running a 4.4, okay? I want to, power clean 375. That ain't in me right now, Jay. Like, that's just where we're at. And I want to see.
You ain't handsome.
I want to see him handle this in a game-like setting. So, and not just him, Dylan Raidens. Everybody is saying that it was his job to lose, and now it seems like NPF, Nicholas Petit-Frere, is actually pushing him. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, though, Jay. To have a rookie actually pushing you when you've got a year up on him? That's saying a lot.
If you lose that job to a rookie, that's a bad look.
I don't know if it's, Vrabel, I'm trying to, tighten the vice grips on Dylan Raidens and say, hey, you always got to go, or if it's actually that real. Because if it's that real, then we really got to start looking at, and I know it's case by case, but Dylan Raidens didn't play a whole lot coming out before the draft because their school was pretty much shut down because of funding and COVID. But you also got to look at the talent and say, well, who did he go against? And, what are they? Division NAIA? What is it? Division two?
One double A.
It's one double A?
Yeah.
The playoff series, FCS. Though, right? FCS. Or FBS.
NAIA.
I don't care what the talent comes from. The talent just better be good. But you have this kid coming from Ohio State that's already pushing you in his rookie year. That's my question as far as, well, what was it, the level of competition that made him look good? Or was it actually playing at a bigger school like Ohio State that elevated this kid and pushed him further along?
Well, look at Roger McCreary.
You could have come out.
McCreary played in the SEC against those wide receivers, and he looks more the part right now than most people would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody, but he wasn't talked. We weren't talking about Roger McCreary before the draft.
Not like
nobody
that.
Nobody was. But Roger McCreary played at Auburn in the SEC West. So he saw that ridiculous crop of receivers at Alabama.
Yes.
He saw all of those guys. He saw LSU. He saw Georgia. He saw that level of talent. There is something to be said for that. Look at Trey Lance. I want to see what Trey Lance can do because Trey Lance has played. And Carson Wentz.
Come on.
I mean, we can go on and on and on. It doesn't mean you can't succeed. It's not. I mean, McNair came from Alcorn State.
Absolutely.
But there are guys like that. But I also think that ramp up period can be a bear for those guys that haven't seen that level of competition.
Or that time off. Because the guy that's pushing. Roger McCreary is pushing who?
Caleb Farley.
He's had a couple years off. He ain't played the same way Roger McCreary. He's coming off hot off the press. You know what I'm saying? So we got to see this in real time.
Yeah.
And really just start looking at who you're getting at those positions if they're not over and beyond talented, the group that they're at. Like Dylan Raiden should have been high above his guys.
We'll have Rhett next hour, and we'll be able to talk a whole lot about that stuff. We'll talk some SEC football with our friend Brad Crawford at 24/7 Sports in 5 minutes on 104.5 The Zone.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here, ma'am. Our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at CumulusBoost.com.
Welcome back to Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone, brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. Ramon Foster and Jonathan Schaefer are here, boys, until 10. I'm Jason Martin, at Ramon Foster, at Schaefer on Sports, at JMR Radio, at J Martin and Ramon. To the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline, our friend Brad Crawford, 24/7 Sports awaits. Brad, good morning.
Hey, fellas, how are you?
Doing pretty well. So you've written a couple of things that I find interesting. Then there's a lot of stuff going on around college football, but I really like this hated teams of all time piece that I saw this morning, and just looking at this and reliving. Yeah, I hated a lot of these squads. If you did you rank this based on how you hated them, or what do you think the most hateable college football team of all time is?
So look, fellas, I was born in 1987, so I didn't get to see Miami's late 80s, early 90s heyday.
Mm-hmm.
However, I did see Ohio State Miami 2002 final, and that's the first time I remember like getting mad at a call in a college football game. And that pass interference call at the end of that game, man, is still like, how do you throw that flag?
Yeah, I someday maybe he'll answer that question because it obviously wasn't holding. That was a great football game, though, minus the injury that happened in it. That was a great experience. You also have UCF's 2017 uncrowned national champions team on this list.
Yeah.
That's the one in recent years where I'm just like, I think they pointed to beating Auburn in the Chick-fil-A Bowl or something like that. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I hesitate to say it because I know it can be easy, but I just don't know if Auburn cared that much about that football game.
Well, and what's funny is really all of us didn't start hating 2017 UCF until the 2018 season when the lingering, you know, fake national championship stuff just kept coming, you know, it kept coming to the surface. I mean, all we kept hearing was how that 2017 team, you know, beat the team that beat the eventual national champion. And then Scott Frost's 2018 team didn't lose either. So, you know, UCF and Danny White, the former AD there who's now at Tennessee, I mean, they really rode that wave of momentum for like 2 or 3 years and made that school in Orlando really hated.
So there's some of the quarterbacks that you mentioned, and I know a lot of – look, if you're led by a quarterback that's polarizing, your team could be polarizing. Manziel's A&M team, Baker's Oklahoma team, Jameis's Florida State team, Tebow, you could have mentioned in this list,
Cam's
but you went with
Auburn,
Werfel.
Yeah.
Cam and Auburn. Which one do you think is the most polarizing quarterback here in recent memory?
Yeah, I think to me, being an SEC guy, I mean, that 2010 Auburn season – under Cam Newton was just must watch. I mean, every week, you know, you wanted to see. I mean, you remember all the rumors pre NIL about
yeah.
how his dad kind of pimped him out to other programs and got money or whatever. None of that ever really came to light. But I mean, Cam was just the spotlight must see TV, sort of like Johnny Manziel was back in 2012.
Brett, but I'm actually shocked. I know the list had to be hard. I knew the Reggie Bush push was going to make it, but none of those mid-2000 Florida teams made it. Like, I love the Tebow speech, but I hated it at the same time. And maybe it's because of me. Well, you know why.
Yeah, I've got a soft spot in my heart for Tim Tebow. He's one of the greatest college football players ever. I mean, he really put his team on his back for like 2.5+ years. And really, you know, it was a hard time finding the right Florida year to put in on there, as well as Alabama. You know, most of the emails and comments on Twitter I've gotten is, how do you not include Alabama on this list? Well, there's like 5 hated Alabama teams.
Yeah.
And it was hard to pick one. 2011 for me, though, would be the most hated Bama team. The one that, you know, lost that 9-6 game against LSU and then I think beat them 21-3 in the final. 21-0 maybe.
With that being said, the revisiting those Florida teams, we talk about hated teams, and I got some really good friends. I'm talking about lifelong friends off of those teams. How do you think a 30 for 30 would look for them in hindsight with Hernandez and just the entire breakup? How can you have on one end Tebow and Hernandez on the other? Like, what would that actually look like?
I would love to see an in-depth look at Aaron Hernandez, Tebow, Urban Meyer, Percy Harvin, man, one of the greatest SEC players ever that really doesn't get the shine. But I mean Percy was, you know, he was Kadarius Toney before Kadarius Toney. I mean, he was nasty in the SEC.
On the other side, I'll say something current, man. I've been, you know, we had this conversation, I think, Jay, earlier last week or late last week about the new quarterback at South Carolina.
Yeah.
How is he going to be able to develop and play in the SEC? Of course, the Big 12 is looked at as a passing league, and, you know, it's a little less defense over there. How do you see Rattler making it happen in the SEC at South Carolina?
Yeah, some of those support staff guys and sources I have in Columbia, man, have told me 3 or 4 times so far in fall practice. They've only been there for a week, but, you know, the ball comes out of Spencer's hand different. It's the most talented quarterback Gamecocks have ever signed. Like, we all knew that coming in, but to see it on the field the first week of practice, I mean, that speaks volumes to, you know, where that offense could go this season.
Mm-hmm.
And South Carolina is not talentless at the playmaker spots. I mean, Jaheim Bell at tight end is probably going to be a late first round, early second round pick. You know, Josh Vann's a true wide receiver one. They've got some guys from the portal who expect to be, you know, key additions. So Spencer Rattler is a guy who's probably going to add, you know, 1.5 to 2.5 wins to that win total for the Gamecocks this season. And if the defense shows up, you know, maybe it's a team that can challenge for that, you know, second place spot in the SEC East.
Brad, another piece you wrote is these most possible upsets that can happen in college football. The second one you mentioned is Georgia-Tennessee. The way I read this piece, a lot of it is more, hey, these games could be close. These games are going to be ones to keep your eyes on. It's not like you're picking upsets. Am I right there?
That's correct, yeah. But I will say, if I had to put money on a money line upset of the year, I'm feeling really good about Arkansas over Bama. I just think that this is Nick Saban's toughest road schedule in 6 or 7 years, and Arkansas is going to get him at the right time because it comes a week before that, you know, circled A&M game that everybody's talked about for, you know, 3 months now. So I just really think Arkansas, man, is going to be the surprise team in the West, and I think Tennessee is probably going to have that label in the East.
So you said the money line. So are you still assuming, or are you still basically saying Alabama's going to win, but that game's going to be a bear?
No, money line is if Arkansas is a 14-17 point underdog, I'm probably taking Arkansas to win outright. That's my big upset SEC of the year. Yep.
The way the SEC is kind of shaping up, man, a lot of new coaches. You got some teams ascending and some descending. I'm still shocked by Auburn being last in recruiting. I know that can change overnight as far as their program goes. Kentucky's on the way up. South Carolina's on the way up. Arkansas is trying to figure out what Florida is. I'm not the biggest historian when it comes to, let's say, the 80s to the 90s of the SEC, as far as, you know, talent, but as far as coaching talent, as far as just spreading out the wealth in recruiting, is this by far one of the best eras we're going to see in the SEC?
Oh, I think it is, without a doubt. I mean, you look at South Carolina and Mississippi State, who have both improved their recruiting footprints, and mm-hmm. you know, Michael Leach and Shane Beamer's got there, but still, both those programs are outside of the top 10 within the conference. I mean, that's how crazy it is to recruit at a, you know, high-powered national title elite level in the SEC. I mean, really, if you don't have a top 5 signing class essentially every year, then you're probably not going to be in the playoff race. And, you know, part of the reason Kirby Smart has been able to kind of go next level with Georgia, which Mark Richt was unable to, is because, you know, Mark Richt signed top 10 classes. He didn't sign top 1 or 2 classes the way Kirby Smart has done. So, you know, a guy the other day told me that, you know, Kirby Smart is kind of building a mini Alabama between the hedges. I think he's already there. I mean, he's already beaten Saban head-to-head now. He has his national title, and I think over the next 10 years, you probably see 3 or 4 more rings coming out of Athens.
So let me ask you this about Georgia then. Georgia always gets a whole lot of respect. They put a lot of players into the NFL. They have a whole lot of success, man. Why is it that they continue to get looked over? The coaches poll coming out, I know it seems like now, especially with Texas getting a number one vote, that is not taken as serious. But Georgia's the defending national champion, had a top 10, top 3 recruiting class, and still is in that. And they still are number 3. And I know 3 ain't bad, but
right.
Ohio State and Bama, I mean, they beat Bama. You know what I'm saying? Like, why is that with Georgia?
Yeah, I think there's 2 reasons, man. I think a lot of media members, maybe myself included, you know, we don't consider Stetson Bennett uh-huh. an elite quarterback. You know, he's not a top 25 player at that position, in my opinion. Because, look, half the year last year, you know, much of the debate in Athens was still, you know, is it JT Daniels? Is it Bennett? Should one of the freshman guys maybe take his red shirt off and play? And then all of a sudden in November, Stetson Bennett comes ready to play, has a great final 4 or 5 starts, and then, you know, has those 2 big touchdown passes in the second half to beat Bama. And then second, you know, that all world, you know, top-ranked defense of all time, it did lose 8 starters, including 5 in the first round. So, I mean, Georgia's defense is going to take a step back, but, you know, how far a step back is that really when you've got 4 and 5 stars waiting in the wings?
So, Brad Crawford, 24/7 with us here on J. Martin Ramon. I'm looking at Florida's schedule. How likely is it? And I like Billy Napier, and I think Napier's going to have success. How likely is it that we are looking at an Eastern Washington game for Florida on October 1st where the Gators are 1-3? Because they open up with Utah and Kentucky. Yeah. Now, they're both home games, luckily, and then they play South Florida, and then they play Tennessee. I easily could see a scenario where they lose 3 of those 4 games.
Yeah, I almost picked Florida to start 1-3 in September. I mean, I came super close, but I do think Anthony Richardson does enough in those first 2 games to split between Utah and Kentucky. And then I think that game at Tennessee, let's face it, that's probably Tennessee's biggest home game in, I mean, 3 or 4 years. And that's probably the difference in the 3-1 start or 4-0 start for Tennessee, and maybe a top 15, you know, ranking going into October. So Florida's schedule to open the season in that first month is undoubtedly brutal. And, you know, if you read between the lines at what Napier has said all offseason, this team doesn't just have a lack of depth. It doesn't have any depth at all. So, you know, playing a top 10 team like Utah and then a Kentucky team that's going to, you know, ravage you at the line of scrimmage, it's going to be hard to split those first 2 games.
So last year it was Spencer Rattler who finds himself at South Carolina. This year, maybe right there, instead of being Oklahoma, it's Texas. What's going on with Quinn Ewers and this quarterback situation at Texas? I mean, if Quinn Ewers leaves Ohio State, goes to Texas, and then still potentially isn't the guy with Arch Manning coming in, what's happened here?
So I found it very interesting. ESPN put out an article yesterday, you know, top 25 instant impact transfers, and Quinn Ewers did not make the list. So does ESPN know something I don't, that Quinn Ewers is not going to start and maybe, you know, Hudson Card is going to be the guy in Austin? I don't know, man. You know, our recruiting experts, Quinn Ewers is, you know, he's right up there with like Peyton Manning as far as coming out of high school as a can't miss five star quarterback. And you know, so far, you know, I think he threw three passes at Ohio State total. You know, has not started a game at Texas yet. And if Texas is going to compete for a Big 12 title this season, they're going to have elite quarterback play. So I'm a little surprised here after a week of fall camp that there's not more love, you know, heading right now in Quinn Ewers' direction.
I was at a scouting event this past weekend with our Pittsburgh former GM, Kevin Colbert. It was a bunch of teams in there all across the nation. I ended up talking to a guy from Texas. And I was, you know, asking about Arch. It's like, oh, he's everything. I was like, he's really like, they're already waiting on Arch, okay? And I said, well, what about Quinn? I was like, what about yours? I was like, man, this kid is, he left. He's good. And he was like, whoa, I don't know. And this is a scout that's, you know, that evaluates talent for Texas. He said, this Hudson kid, he was like, they are in a battle. So if that's the case, what's next for Quinn Ewers, who was a perfect recruit? He was a one.
Yeah, I think Quinn Ewers fully expects to not only start this season, but, you know, he should have the upper hand on a true freshman Arch Manning next year too. But, you know, if you're hearing some kind of intel from Austin that maybe Quinn Ewers is not the guy in 2022, that's a little bit surprising, man. Based on everybody that I've talked to, I have not seen Quinn throw in person, but you know, everybody kind of compares him to Trevor Lawrence as far as, you know, what he can do with a football on like comeback routes and deep balls at the sideline. I mean, he just has a rocket arm, future first round pick type. But you know, if we go through his first two college seasons without a college start, you know, that's going to be very hard to convince NFL scouts and those guys at the next level that Quinn Ewers is pro football material.
So Brad, yesterday we were having fun with entrance music and doing some stuff because of the Mets closer and all sorts of pro wrestling music and stuff. If you had intro music or entrance music or walk-up music, what would be – give me a couple of selections.
All right, so if I was a closer for the Atlanta Braves, I'd probably have, like, Jermaine Dupri's Welcome to Atlanta or something. And then maybe man, that's tough. Maybe some classic rock 80s hair band, you know, if I'm a closer. I like classic rock songs, and a lot of those guitar riffs would be pretty good in baseball games.
That's fair. Yeah. Brad, appreciate you, brother. Thanks so much.
Brad.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, look at that. Those are Jermaine Dupri and 80s bands
to Atlanta.
Same time.
Yeah. So he's a Braves fan, too. It's clear. Y'all are deep around here, Jay. Braves hold their own court around this piece. It ain't because of the championship, either.
No.
You've been fans for a while.
Yeah.
You know how you get those, oh, I'm a Braves.
Yeah.
Like, you ain't really no daggone Patriots fan. Like, stop. You're from Tennessee. You know, but the Braves fans, they're pretty thick around here, man.
I want to go off on Fanatics again.
They doing it again?
I've already done it because I did it with – I've already used it as a bleep you Aaron Rodgers before when Kayla was in this summer. I'm just furious.
Yeah.
Just so frustrated. Because they have everybody's license. You know what? We'll talk about it. I need a moment.
The prequel.
I need a moment. 615-737-1045. So he basically said, the Bama Arkansas pick. I'm not going to go with him on that, but interesting.
Excuse me? What?
This lines up with Sam Pittman.
Yeah, it does.
That guy, and you need a good foundation. He's building one.
Yeah, you like what he's doing there. Even, I don't think they're going to do that this year.
I've heard him, and even I'm like, yeah, this dude is impressive.
We'll be back. It's Jay Martin on 104.5 The Zone.
Suck it.
Doesn't matter if you have one cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
And that's the bottom line.
And that's doing the butt right there.
Doesn't matter if you have one cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
Here we go.
Doing the butt.
Nothing quite like that 90s hip hop with that swing, the new jack swing stuff.
You had to get up and go dance, Jay. Like, I know I shouldn't be talking to you. Come here. Holding up the wall, Jay.
Deontay sued for no showing his football camp.
Yeah.
Good thing you got that money.
If he'd have played this music,
he'd have shown up.
Doesn't matter if you have one cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
What was that? You said who was sued?
Deontay Johnson.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Well, he didn't show up at his own camp.
I wonder if the campers got Deontay Johnson special football camp t-shirt.
Special edition.
Limited edition. So we were looking at this during the break. What are the Royals doing? What are you doing with this sandwich?
Yeah.
I understand you do weird stuff at ballparks sometimes.
What, they stack the
sandwich?
We don't
need to add Reese's peanut butter cups to a brisket, pulled pork, and bacon sandwich.
Reese's.
Abby was like, I can sort of understand. It's like sweet, salty, and all this. I'm like, dude, no.
Oh.
We don't need to add the beatus to the heart disease.
The beatus. For real. Like, and not just that, Jay. Like, it's racist. Like, leave that alone.
We're not in jail. We don't have to eat jailhouse snacks. We can eat regular snacks.
The question is, why did who was the person who was just like, you know what? I bet Reese's is good on a brisket sandwich.
Who actually
dabbled? What are we doing that for?
Who dabbled into that? You know how you mistakenly like, oh, man.
Just enjoy the protein. If you want to eat a dessert, eat it later. God. You do you, boo. But don't put that on a sandwich.
No.
I should have saved that one for tomorrow.
Can I be real? It's I don't know if I'm trying the Elvis. What is it? Peanut butter, bacon.
Bananas.
I don't know if I'm trying that. And restaurants have that on menu. I don't know if I want that either, Jay. Like, no. And not just Reese's on the sandwich, Jay. It's whole Reese's cups that's on this.
Yeah.
Why would you deface pulled pork like that?
Or deface Reese's like that?
What are we doing in this world, America?
These two things are great separate, but we don't need to put them together.
We don't need to put them together.
Just like Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Mountain Dew.
You know that was one of my bleep you Aaron Rodgers,
yeah,
too.
And you mentioned it again during the break, so yeah, I'm just bringing it back up.
I know
it's
an
old wound.
Why do we even... who's ever tried that Flamin' Hot Doritos and Mountain
Somebody
Dew?
Mentioned it in the chat. I tried to find a zero sugar because I was going to try it.
I'd take a sip of the full or the heavy just to see what it would be like. And I don't even think it's in the stores no more.
No, it's there.
It's still there?
Yeah, I saw it yesterday.
Flamin' Hot stuff is everywhere, by the way. You can Flamin' Hot. They Flamin' Hot like Doritos. Like, they Flamin' Hot Cool Ranch. They're Flamin' Hot in everything, Jay. Listen to me. If you put your shoe in the store, it's going to get Flamin' Hot. It is all I'm telling you. I don't know where this push of Flamin' Hot's come
from.
Well,
dude, this is weird. Like,
and I like coffee.
There are certain coffees that come out at times of the year. There's like lattes they put chili or cayenne or something.
Yeah.
I'm not here for it. The back end, it just leaves a weird, like, I don't need that with my coffee.
Or
my latte.
I've seen people do this. This is very popular these days, especially in the summer. Not probably any time. But the jalapeno mojito or the jalapeno, like, spirit drink that you can get, as bothersome to me too. Like, and I've had it. I'm like, take these daggum seeds out of my drink. Have you ever had the spicy cocktail?
Not really. That's just not. I don't need that in my beverage. Casey's on line one. Casey,
what's up, Casey?
What's up, guys? Yeah, I just wanted to speak on that biscuit sandwich with the Reese's. I've actually had something like that.
Of course.
I was about to say it's really not that bad, guys. Like, you really can't taste it that much. So I feel like it's something cheap they can throw on and charge like an extra $2 or $3 to kind of make some more money. So, but with the peanut butter and banana sandwich or bacon sandwich or whatever, I actually grew up on those. Those are fire, dog.
Peanut butter, bacon, banana.
I mean, that's similar to like bacon being an ice cream and stuff like that.
I don't do that either.
I don't either. But it's the sweet, sweet and salty, right, Casey?
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, I wouldn't even call it really salty. I mean, unless you just put a lot of salt, like I said, on. You talking about the brisket or the banana sandwich?
Well, the banana sandwich, if you're putting bacon with peanut butter in, you're kind of getting both worlds there.
Yeah, it's sweet because I do mine a little different. I put the banana and then I put honey on top of that. So it's kind of like a honey banana peanut butter sandwich, basically. I don't really put too much bacon on it.
Huh. Interesting, Casey. You've gone from cats to bananas and peanut butter on a sandwich, man. I'm proud of you.
I mean, peanut butter and banana sandwiches is not, I mean, that's a normal
Shout
thing.
Out to Casey. Yeah, I know.
It's adding bacon to it that I would never think.
I've seen it with a beef patty, peanut butter, and a banana on it. Is that a life you willing to live, Hanjay?
What?
like a beef patty with peanut butter, banana, and bacon.
No. Okay. There are things that are good separately that are not always good together.
I don't know about that. It's a little weird.
So I found this article at MASH where they've tried the Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew, and they're talking about how great it is.
Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew?
Really, really good. It's delicious. More lime forward than regular Mountain Dew with orange juice flavor. Extra dose of citrus tang is a perfect complement to the heat, which is robust. Noticeable burn on the way down, especially in the aftertaste.
What are you trying to like write this up like it's bourbon or something? Because it's not bourbon.
So apparently there is not a zero sugar, which I'm not shocked. So this stuff, not healthy.
If you drinking this, Jay, you about that life.
74 grams of carbs.
How many?
73 from added sugar in a 20 ounce.
Yeah, heavy. Heavy. By the way, Ron Rivera fired his defensive
line. Oh, I thought you were about to say he was fired. I'm like, what?
No, he fired his defensive line.
Because he tried
Mountain
Dew Flamin' Hot.
No, because the D line can't get right. He said philosophical.
Transcripts ain't right?
It's some. How you fired? This is two fired coaches in camp so far this year.
But it's just interesting how front offices and coaching staff seem to crumble around Carson Wentz.
Showed
I know it's defense, but it can't be his fault, right? It's got to be the defense's fault.
He didn't get down on the sack. Hey, I touched you. You're out.
Phrasing. 615-737-1045.
Phrasing?
I didn't even get to my rant about Fanatics.
Yeah, we'll
and Brandon wants to talk about spicy drinks. So get your phone call after the break. We'll have Rep Ryan, who just popped in the studio across from us. He'll pop in the room here shortly. Here, Jay Martin and Bone, 104.5 The Zone.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.